Hello everybody, this is Daniel here, and today I'm very excited to share with you my conversation with Andreas Baarden, the owner and CEO of the KTO Group, which is the seventh most known iGaming company in Brazil. I have to tell you, this is the most honest conversation I have ever had with anybody on this level. The wisdom and the insight that Andreas shared during the podcast about everything that he's done in order to become the seventh most known company in Brazil in the iGaming field is extraordinary, super interesting. And I think that, you know, my main goal with this podcast was to humanize this field and to really come up and share the best stories, the most honest and exciting stories of business leaders in this field. And I think that this conversation is really a benchmark for what I'm trying to do here. So I really hope you enjoy it. So without any further ado, let's just jump right into it. So we are on record. This is very exciting, first of all. So thank you so much for agreeing on being on my podcast. It's very exciting, first of all. And I have to say that when we met on a Barcelona, it was... You had the most incredible stories on how even everything started for you. And I'd like to hear more about that. How come this company, your role, everything?
Yeah, thank you first for having me. I'm looking forward for a nice conversation. And yes, it was interesting we bumped into Barcelona because we have a kind of a unique story. I think how our business started and basically how we managed to succeed within our business. So. I've been working in iGaming for over 20 years, 4 years ago, now almost 5 years ago. I decided to try to do something on my own because I was the guy who always used to be complaining about, why are companies not doing this? Why are they not doing that? We should do this instead. And then what's the better way of doing it than actually trying to put your money where your mouth is, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I decided to open my own company. 4 years ago, the landscape of the iGaming was completely different. It was a lot less regulated market, a lot more opportunities in Europe. But there was already rumors about things were kind of getting more and more regulated. And that makes it a lot more difficult for startups to succeed because there's a lot of hurdles around regulation, etc. So I was kind of sitting down what can we do that others are not doing? And we start looking at Latin America as one of the more interesting regions that we saw there was a lack of focus from the operators here in Malta, where we are based. So that's kind of how we looked into Latin America. And then something very interesting happened. We saw a Facebook post about the guy from Brazil who basically set out hey, can I come and work for free for someone? Because I just want to learn about iGaming. I'm here in Malta trying to study English, and I want to kind of learn a little bit about iGaming.
Wow.
And no one replied basically outside us because we were at the state. I said to myself, this guy has no experience, but he can teach me anything about Brazil because I was kind of curious about Brazil. Because I think right now in Europe, we have a very little understanding on Latin America and especially Brazil.
Yeah.
Because I think the way we look at Brazil is Rio de Janeiro and beach and football. That's kind of the stereotypical things. But when I brought this guy in, he started telling me a lot more about Brazil. And that was basically the start of the journey of KTO. And how we become one of the biggest operators in Brazil at the moment.
So you became partners. He became in a key role in the company.
Yeah. So basically how it started was in the beginning, I said, maybe we can try something on social media. So he was just opening up social media for us, doing a little bit on Facebook, a little bit on Instagram. But we were speaking, he's a journalist and not a marketing person. So what was interesting was that as a journalist, he has all the contacts to media houses, to influencers, to former footballers, to lawyers, to judges, to politicians, to everyone is in his phone book. So basically that, we started reaching out to companies he used to work for as a journalist or footballers that he have maybe retired that maybe want to be interested in doing some influencing for us. And we started like that very, very slowly. And in the beginning, iGaming is kind of new in Brazil. It's been existing, of course, for many years, but there is not like in Europe where it's a very mature market. So a lot of people don't know about sports betting and casino and stuff like this in Brazil. So in the beginning, a lot of them were kind of hesitant. What's this? This is something new. But slowly, slowly, we started gaining the trust and the reputation of our country manager, Cassio, his name is so strong in the region that we're in that people trusted him and they started trusting KTO. And that's kind of how we built the brand, is through trust, always showing off the good side and actually being the educator of sports betting and casino in Brazil. So like that, we started to kind of from a grassroots movement, starting building up a small empire that we have in the Brazil. So
now you are the seventh most known iGaming company in Brazil.
Yes. So and we have done that in about 3 years' time in Brazil, that we've been there since 2019. And we have done it on a very, very small budget compared to our competitors, because almost our major competitors are very well funded. We are a very small company. We don't have a lot of backings. We have done it, but being a little bit more clever, I would say, than other markets. Because one thing I, as a European, took is that I need to have the respect for the country and the local knowledge of the country. I cannot apply the same strategies that are actually working in Europe and just thinking that these are going to work in Brazil. So what we did was that, as I said, we started with a grassroots movement, building the trust in the brand, because I realized that in Brazil right now, there's a lot of European brands. They maybe have Google Translate on customer support. They don't have the right payment methods at the time. They don't have the right way of communicating. They're talking about European football. But you realize pretty quick in Brazil, it's all about the local football and how strong the culture is of football in Brazil. So just being very humble and trying to have an open mindset, not thinking, I worked 20 years in gaming, so I know what works. No, this is a new country. I need to be open-minded. So I think me and Cassio, we kind of created this strategy in Brazil that we looked at the country of Brazil more as a continent rather than a country. Because Brazil reminds me a lot of US in a sense that it's a federal country. So it has a lot of different states. Each state has their own culture, their own kind of way of living, etc. So we looked at Brazil as a continent. And we decided that, okay, if we can't compete with our competitors with money, we need to find a different way. So the way I thought about it is that, okay, why don't we focus on one specific area of Brazil, one state, to really be super local and to be kind of put all the resources that we have into one specific area. So, and that is Rio Grande do Sul, which is the most southern state of Brazil. So we basically dominated that state. So in 3 years' time, we become the most recognized brand in Rio Grande do Sul by far. And just by doing that, we also, as you mentioned, became the seventh most recognized brand in 2021 in Brazil. So it's been a rapid success for our brand.
Wow. You know, it makes me wonder what initially drew you to that type of industry to begin with? Like, why iGaming and not anything else, really?
Well, for my sake, I was always into gambling since I was a kid. Like, my family, we always played cards for money, small money, of course, pennies, but we always had that in our family where we were playing cards and stuff like this. I always was playing sports myself. So as soon as I realized you can start actually putting money on the outcomes of the matches, at the time in Sweden, you only had the government's monopoly to go and make your bets with. But I even had like older friends putting in the bets for me, because there's obviously 18 years old, so we should not really be talking about that. But I'm old now, and in the 90s, things were different. Nowadays, very important. No one under 18 should ever place a bet. But yeah, in the 1990s, things were a little bit different, that everyone knows how things were doing. And we're talking like a €1 bet or 50 cents bets in those days. So that's kind of how I got into it. And I was always much into this. I used to go to the library. I used to find books about how odds works, how calculations, how probabilities wow. works. And I'm like 15, 16 years old when I start studying this. So I was always kind of fascinated by this, how casinos make their money, how sportsbook works. I remember there was like a Finnish guy that wrote like a very good book in those days on how odds compiling works. And I used to go to the library because I couldn't afford buying it, and just reading and taking notes from that in those days. Then when I went into university, I was studying political science. I had just doing it as a hobby, all of this gambling and stuff. So
yeah,
I started writing on some internet forums in early 2000, mm-hmm. when forums were still a big thing. I started writing like different picks on who is going to win. And basically, two companies at the time who was very big on the internet when it just started, Unibet and Expect, had reached out to me. And I decided to join Expect, which at the time was a very big online bookmaker, to work as an odds compiler. So I basically just left my studies in Sweden and wow. flew down to Malta on a whim and started working as an odds compiler. And for me, that was the best thing I ever done, because I think it's something that we should all remember who works in this industry, that every single day I go to work and I'm so happy I can work with something that I love doing. Because most people in the world have to go to a job they hate. Yeah. I was so lucky in my life that I've been able to go to a job I always like doing for 20 years. And that's the biggest blessing by being in this industry, because it's my hobby, it's my interest, it's my life. That's what I enjoy doing.
You know, I have so many questions. I don't know where to start. First of all, I have to say that it's so nice to hear that you actually love what you do and that you were passionate about it from the very beginning. Because, you know, many people think about business leaders in this industry as people who are just business, all about business, killer instincts. They just out there to exploit the player and to make as much as money as possible. And it's so nice to hear that you actually like it. And you come from the perspective of the one who's playing the games, because you, as a young adult, you were playing those games because it was really enjoyable for you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a traditional businessman. My family, we have no business background, anything like this. And the one thing I said, that's also one of the reasons I started my own company as well, is that I wanted to make it as player friendly as possible. Because I think yeah. a lot of the times, a lot of the gaming companies, what I could see at least, they were going away from the play. They think they're being player centric, but mm. they're going away and trying to disguise it. This is entertainment. That is just a way of kind of hiding sometimes that you're actually working with gambling, and gambling has some issues with it that comes with responsible gambling and stuff. A lot of companies speak about responsible gambling, and then you see them getting huge fines on the back end. So I understand why some people are doing that. It's very important. But I think if you really care about the customer, if you really care about them, you look after them. And you try to speak in a responsible way, and it has to come from within the company. It has to come from the leaders of the company. Me, yeah. as being a player, I can always, one of our keywords that we have, one of the values we live after in our company is walk in other people's shoes. What we mean yeah. by that is that we're always trying to see the perspective of the other person. If it's a customer, if it's a supplier, if it's an employee, when you have an argument or when you're having a conversation, always try to see where the other person is coming from. And I think that's very important when you're dealing even with responsible gambling and stuff, and how you're building a business. We put a lot of focus into the brand, into the trust of the brand. And I think if people wouldn't trust me or trust the company, I think it's would be difficult in the long run to run a business. So we are not like there to steal the money from our customers in a sense. Yes, we want to be profitable, but we're also there to trying to enhance the user experience and then really trying to understand when people are having an issue and see how we can help them. Not just we are forced to close your account and return some money or something. No, no. We try to see what we can do to actually help people when they're having issues. At the same time, some of the revenues that we do in Brazil that I'm very, very proud of is that we put a lot of money into to charity works in Brazil, because Brazil is a country, unfortunately, where there are some people with a lot of money and there is a lot of people that don't have any money. So what we do is that trying to help out as much as we can with charity works in Brazil.
What type of charity?
So as an example, like this year, we signed two influencers, which one is Tinga and one is De Alessandro. They are two kind of heroes, but how we sign them is as social ambassadors. So we don't actually face them. Or if you go to our webpage, you won't see an image of them saying, hey, come and make a free bet or get this bonus. No, we actually use them to go out, meet the poor people. I actually went to Brazil. I met with Tinga where he was grown up, which is kind of a favela in Brazil. And we're basically giving them money to help raising the standard in these communities. If that is putting computers so people can get a better education, if that's giving food to the food trucks that they're putting out there, a lot of these kind of initiatives. We also have launched a clothing line, a KTO clothing line, where basically people can buy the shirts of KTO, different hoodies, hats, everything. And all the money from that is going straight into to these charity organizations as well. So this is kind of something, I don't see myself as a philanthropist per se, but I'm actually very, very proud over stuff like that, that we can do to help the society, because it's so sad sometimes when you go to Brazil and you see how poor some people are. So if we can do a little bit of a difference, I'm very, very happy with that.
It sounds to me as you say that it's not only about business, but about making an impact, which is something much greater and bigger than just making money. It's actually being of a good influence.
Yes, because that's why that's one thing I love. First of all, and I have to say something, I love the Brazilian people. It's such an amazing people. So when you go there and you meet the people, you cannot be helped to be touched by these people, right? It's such a passionate, friendly people. So
you have a story of an encounter, of an experience that you had with the Brazilian people that really left a mark on you, impressed you?
No, I mean, it's... I'll bring it up again. When I met Tinga, he took me around the area of Restinga when he was actually born. His name, Tinga, has come from the area he was born, which is Restinga. And I see all these people, but they're always smiling. They're always trying to help each other. Everyone is hugging each other. Everyone is trying to help out. I'm coming there as this gambling CEO, but everyone was just not nice to me because, oh, I want money. No, they were just nice to me. Oh, nice to see you. And it was a genuine kind of interest, not just how can I get money out of this guy. No, it was a genuine interest in showing the areas and the problems that they are facing. And I never felt like they were trying to, get some money out from us. No, it was more about, hey, this is our situations. What can we do to help? And I think that's just an amazing situation, because in this business, I think many times when you meet different companies, the only thing they think when they see a gaming operators is, okay, how much money can we get out of these guys? That's how I feel many times. But when you go to Brazil and you meet these people, I didn't feel that. I feel like it was a genuine interest. It's like, hey, this is our situation. It's up to you if you want to help us or not. And we're not asking for anything. And that gets you very inspired.
Yeah. You know, you talked a lot about the positive aspects of your job and your role in your company. And I'm curious to ask you, what is the most difficult part for you as a CEO of this type of company?
The most difficult part is that I think gaming industry has a very bad reputation around regulators, around banks, etc., and things like this. So sometimes, even though I feel we're doing nothing wrong, sometimes you get treated almost like you, I would say, the banks are not happy with you. They always suspect that you are some kind of criminal almost. Mm-hmm. And that is very frustrating for me because I think we're doing so many good things. And I think we have so many opportunities to create jobs, to create a fun environment for our customers. And as I said, giving back to society as well. But then you go into the banks, we might as well be, it's very frustrating sometimes because they look at you as you might be a criminal almost. And that I feel is very hard for me to take down because I think it's an industry that has a very bad reputation. Maybe it has some reason for it because there are some companies that are not always the best actors, but most of us are really reputable companies and we're really trying to make something good. You should look around in Malta how many good gaming companies there are here that contributes a lot to the society and helping a lot. And still, I think gaming companies get a bad reputation.
I completely agree with you. This is something that was told to me by many people while I was doing the research and everything about the reputation of the industry. And that's why I came with the idea of creating this podcast to really humanize this industry, because there are a lot of beautiful people really that love what they do, are experts at what they do, and are really passionate about it. And that's why I'm so happy to talk to people like yourself that can share their personal story and show that there is heart inside of it after all.
Yeah, I mean, that's also one of our keywords is passion. A lot of the people working with us have a passion for this industry. And we really, that's one of the when I interview people right now, that the one of the words that for me is very important is the passion. Passion is everything. You should enjoy what you're doing and you should believe in what you're doing. If you think that is something wrong with the gaming industry, don't come here. If you think, it's not reputable or anything like this, don't come here. My point is this. I believe that we are as white as any businesses nowadays because we are the more scrutiny than almost any other industries. So have the right passion and believe in what we're doing. That's the key for us because there are a lot of good people working in this industry.
You've said earlier that you've been working in this industry for approximately 20 years.
Yes.
Right? What is the biggest lesson that you've learned during this time, on a personal level, not only a business lesson, but a personal lesson?
That's a very, very good question. And I have to think about it a bit because I think it's actually the most things I learned is to think. What gaming industry learned me is to think in many different levels, meaning. Mm. You need what's obvious on the surface is not always what it is. You have to really think in many different levels. Like it's hard to explain, but like, I think if you're working as, because gaming industries, everything is changing so quick. Mm-hmm. So if you're not ahead of the game, you're going to miss out. I see many companies be extremely successful because they have the right timing. And a lot of gaming companies are failing because they have the wrong timing. Mm. So to be able to adapt, to think at many levels ahead of you, if A doesn't happen, you need to go to B, to C, to D, to always be prepared to change. And I think that's the biggest thing because iGaming is all about timing because it's changing so much regulations, bankings, payment processing. Everything can just turn your business upside down. And if you're not ahead of the game and can see what the future is ahead of you, you can be in very, very big problems. On the other hand, if you can foresee the future, what actually is going to happen, you can make incredible success from your business. So I think that you really need to, it's not like other business. Some other businesses is very straightforward. Like if you have a supermarket, it's got to be kind of the same. Then maybe one big change happened, like with COVID, where you needed to work on deliveries and stuff every 20 years. But in gaming, we have a COVID almost every year. There's always some new regulation. There's always some new payment processor closing down or game providers, et cetera. New games coming up, new features coming up that changing the industry. So I think it's so dynamic and you need to take advantage of the future.
If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. That's how they say it.
Yes, but then also be able to adapt. I think that is the thing, not to be rigid with your planning, the meaning that you need to be agile. So you can plan ahead in many ways, which is very good, but be able to not be stubborn and actually pivot when you need to pivot.
Yeah. You know, by the ring on your hand, I can tell that you are a married man. And it makes me curious, how do you balance between your business life to your family life, being in the position that you are with the level of success that you're having?
Probably the wrong person. Because I'm a complete workaholic. And you need to have a very patient wife, which I have. She has an incredible patience with me because I put a lot of, even since when you have that passion, when you're burning inside for you, it's also your hobby almost. It's very hard to let go of the job. Like I lived with it for 365, 24/7 for 20 years. So you almost need to have a very, very patient wife. And I have a very, very patient wife that understands what I like and what I need to do. So, and then obviously you need to take them on some really nice holidays here and there. So usually I take her to the Maldives or something like this here and there to make the wife happy, right? So, but yeah, the key is to have a very patient wife, I say.
For how many years you've been together, the two of you?
Oh, we've been together for, now you put me on the spot. Imagine if you listen and get this one wrong. I think it's 18 years now. We've been
together. Yeah. 18 years in total.
Yes.
From the day you've met.
Yes. So almost, I met, so she's Maltese. When I moved to Malta, so maybe like around 2 years after I moved here to Malta, we met.
Wow. You know, I have this little obsession when I meet people that they have a good relationship for many years to always ask them, what is the secret? How come you've been so successful in this relationship alongside your business? What is the secret for such a long-term relationship?
I think you need to be able to meet an angel, because that's what I think I met. You need to meet, as I said, a wife that has a lot of patience. But it's like, the only thing is, I think it's always is to have an open communication on this. Again, what I had as a company value, walk in their shoes, trying to understand what the other person is seeing, what the other person is doing. I think it's very important, because once you put your perspective and look at things from, because I think in today's society, we're so focused on me, me, me. I think social media is contributing to that a lot. It's my perspective. It's my ideas. Nothing is wrong.
Yeah.
There's always people that can side with me anywhere in the world. So I think we lose a little bit of, the ability to actually see other people's perspective. And I think that is the key, to actually trying to understand the other person's perspective rather than just always defending your own perspective. I think that's the biggest key you can have. And I think anyone that does this with anything will have a lot of aha moments in life when you're actually trying to understand the other person rather than defending your own viewpoints all the time.
Yeah, you know, acting from an egocentric attitude or position is always, you know, acting against yourself eventually, because you miss the most critical part, which is the communication, also in personal life and also in business.
Absolutely.
And how did you two meet?
Oh, we, it's not so romantic, on a nightclub. So, at the time when I was in Malta, there was not so many foreigners around in the in the winter season, because Malta at the time, but very few foreigners living here. Now it's completely different. But so I think my blonde hair stood out a bit, and we bumped into each other a few times, and then we started going out together. So that was how we met.
And you have children?
No, we don't have any children. No, we don't.
You plan on having?
Probably not. We are a bit too old right now. Over 40s, both of us, so it's too late for that. Yes.
I really hope that everybody who's listening to that is also watching on YouTube the episode, because you look like 30, 35 tops. Like, oh, I would never... I would never guess.
That's what I'm telling everyone as well, that I am. So unfortunately, everyone in the office knows I'm a lot older than that. So I am 43 at the moment. So it's a bit old.
Well, you're still young, though.
Yeah. Not tell that to my body, because my body is aching every morning. Or my tennis coach when I play tennis. It tells me I'm moving way too slow. So, but it's been a long journey in the iGaming. And I still, to this day, 20 years later, have the same fire, though. That's what I'm known for amongst my employees. It's just the fire I have for this industry and the passion I have for it.
You know, it's so inspiring every time you say it, because it makes me think about myself and I guess many other people as well, that they do what they love, but there is a challenge that is coming up and some sort of a setback, let's say, and then you go instantly to this attitude of, you know what, forget everything, maybe it's not for me. How do you deal with maybe these type of moments that things are not going your way and things are even going against you sometimes? How do you keep yourself motivated and passionate about it against the odds sometimes?
Yeah, that's the one thing that I think is one of my strengths, is that many times where I'm like, when things are going against me, I'm the guy that just puts the, many times I feel, my first thing is like, I should give up. Kind of. That's the first thing. I'm not going to lie. That's like, oh shit, I just
like
give
many
up
people.
And I want to go. But then I'm like, always comes down to like, hey, like, it's the fight. I'm not the person that's fleeing. In the end, I'm the guy that's going to stand to the last man fighting. So it's just something I'm born with. I think it's something that sits inside me, that I'm going to, if I'm going down, I'm going to go down with this, with a fight. I'm not going to go out just running away, right?
Surrendering.
So, yeah, I'm not surrendering. Like, that's the thing. I'm always going to go out on my shield. And I think it's just, you just sit down and say, okay, what can I do? What are the options? And then trying to logically sit down is like, okay, these are the things. What are the solutions on these issues? Who should I speak to? And that's very important. Over the last year, I have recruited two persons to this company, which I consider my cornerstones, that I can also lean on and discuss with. So when things are going tough, you need to have that in business. In this, when I started the business, I felt very alone many times. But now I managed to get some of the people that are really cornerstones. So when things are going tough, you need to have someone you can discuss these things with and come up with solutions. I think that is very important, because I'm also trying to shield all the issues at work from home. I think that's what, going back to the relationship again, I think that's very important. I don't want to use my wife to ventilate all the problems I'm having at work, because I think that wouldn't be good for the relationship. So it's much better to have people I'm working with and ventilate to a few key persons, and then basically trying to find solutions together on how do we move forward on this.
I liked a lot what you said about perseverance, essentially. And I have this philosophy that every characteristic that we have, we've learned somehow from somebody who's close to us or a role model or anything like that. If there is anybody in your life, maybe even as a child, as a young adult and so on, that really inspired you in talking about their perseverance in that aspect?
I cannot really think of anything like that for just that perseverance. I think it's just something I'm I think you're born with it, kind of, you know what I mean? Because I cannot really see it. I cannot really think. It sounds a bit selfish saying like, oh, I don't have role models. Of course, I have role models in a sense, but I think it's just bits and pieces of people or something you're kind of born within. I don't know where it's coming from, to be honest. It's just something that I have. You know, it's like, I cannot really pinpoint the one person on this. I think it's just many people in and I always try to take bits and pieces from different people in my career that I have learned from. I would say more than one person.
You brought it up, so let's dive deep into it. Who are your role models, really?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, number one, I should say that's the most basic standard question is number one is my parents, just because they give me a very solid kind of childhood, which I thought everyone had. But when you actually get to get out in the big world and you're meeting people, the more you're discussing with people, you realize that having a good childhood is not very common. And I think I had a very good childhood and my parents raised me in a very good way. And I had a lot of freedom as well to actually explore what I wanted to explore. I also think I also like my grandpa on my mother's side a lot because he was very outspoken. He always said the truth, meaning there was no sugarcoating around anything. And that's something that I think I have as well. Like people always... I can be very direct with people. Some people don't like that. Some people enjoy it. But I always have it that you should know where you stand with me immediately. There is no kind of circling around the back or everyone knows where they stand with me and what they think about things. And I think that's important. That's something I learned from my grandpa that I really kind of looked upon. That I think it's important to be very direct and honest, that your handshake means something.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Specifically, living now in this world of social media, and in, I think this trend is also penetrating to real life, really, of people not being genuine. You know, like telling you one thing and thinking something else, and it kind of it plays with your mind, and it creates a lot of dishonesty.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting era we're living in right now because it's changing so fast. And I think social media, everyone is very... I think social media is the best, worst thing that ever happened to us. And what do I mean by that?
It's a blessing and a curse.
Yes, because I think social media, people are very like dismissing it. Oh, look how stupid it is. And everyone is dismissing it. But at the same time, it's connecting a lot of the people with it. But I also think it can also bring out the worst of people because people become very me-centric. I think that's a little bit of a plague that we are living in at the moment. But I see the opportunities in that because if you are as a person can stand out and be not so focused on yourself, focus on other people and what other people are thinking, you can also open a huge world of discoveries. Like, just look at podcasting. I love podcasting. That's kind of something completely new media, something you're focusing a lot on in our industry right now, that from a marketing perspective and getting new reach to potential customers is a podcast. But I just love the podcast because you can actually find a way to get to know people and on a deeper level, because I think that's a desire a lot of us are having and had for a long time. To actually, people always thought that media was this 2-minute clip. If anyone wants to hear more than 2 minutes, you get bored. But I think like people are actually interested in the stories of people. And I think that's one way I think social media, if we should call podcast social media in a sense, I think it's kind of connected, have brought out that you get to know people. And people's stories, because it's always fascinated me is people's stories, you know, about everything.
Yeah. You know, I like it so much that you said about the podcasting stuff, because for me, one of my favorite podcasts, it's the Joe Rogan podcast. And every episode is like 3 hours. And I don't even know the people that is interviewing. I'm just listening to that like on the spot. And because every episode is like 3 hours long, I can spend like an entire week finishing just one episode. And I feel like I'm going through an experience of, you know, really getting to know the person who's talking. And I think this is something is very lacking in our society today, and specifically in the iGaming industry, because when I was doing the research for this podcast, I couldn't really find personal interviews of business leaders. Like everything is about KPIs, business, like no personal perspective at all. And as you just said earlier about this industry going through so much scrutiny over the years and having this bad reputation, I think that this form of media can really open up people to the real stories of the real people, the real business leaders of this industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think as well, this is another thing, is that maybe as well, like one of our successes we had in Brazil is that everyone knows who I am from in Brazil, who is the CEO, KTO. They know who our country manager, KTO. We're putting a face to our business because, as I said, we're not trying to hide who we are. I think sometimes in this business, a lot of people are afraid because to show who they are maybe embarrassed explaining about iGaming or gambling because it has some stigma around it. But yeah, we are trying to embrace that we are a gaming company and that we are who we are. And this is we. This is us. You can trust us. Meaning, we're putting our name on it as a CEO, as a country manager. We are not trying to hide something. And I think that's important as well. And I think podcasts and stuff like that, people get to know, like, we are people as well. We're not just some company hiding behind some offshores. Yeah. No, there are a lot of stories of people working in this industry. We're just like anyone else. It's just bunch of stories, in a sense, that's trying to make a successful business.
How many employees do you have under you these days?
So right now we are about 85 people worldwide. We started the business 4 years ago. I think I have a photo where we are like 3 people in the office. So we've gone from, in 4 years, we have gone from 3 people to 85 people. So it's been quite a quick growth of employees.
If I ask them, do you think they will testify for you for being a good boss?
I think people that's working right now, I would say that I hope so at least. But that's one thing, question. I don't think, I think you're also maybe doing something wrong if everyone thinks you are a good boss. I think because sometimes you have to take some tough decisions that people don't agree with, and people sometimes take it personally or take it. So I don't think we should be in a business where we are always, how can I say, trying to please everyone, because that's impossible. You have to take some tough decisions. That's going to be disliked sometimes. So I hope, though, that people can understand that. The one thing I'm always trying to do, we're very humble. As a company, we have a kind of flat structure, meaning I speak to everyone, meaning I've been to companies where the CEO doesn't speak to someone who works in customer support, doesn't even say hi to them, just walk past them like they're nobodies. I'm always trying to treat everyone that works with us with respect, speaking to them, no matter what type of job they're doing. I'm always have time for everyone. And that is something I've always trying to live by, because in the end of the day, we're all just playing a role in this company, and no one is bigger than the company, in a sense, because the show must go on, in a sense. And that's another thing I learned from a previous company that I worked, which was Betsson, that I think at the time, many times people believe they are so important to our business.
Yeah.
But we don't realize that the show is always going on. When a company gets to a certain size, the show is always going on. You can always contribute. You can always try to focus on your own career and also trying to build that within a company. But no one is ever bigger than a specific company because there's so many people in a big company. So when you're getting bigger and bigger, I think it's very important to be humble enough to realize that. And that's why I think leadership for me is also making sure that you can become redundant, because when you're a very good leader, you're training other people to be able to succeed.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you're just going to another level all the time. And I think that's the key for success to if you want to build a career, I think, is that always see yourself as just the enabler of other people. Yeah. If you look at it that way.
The facilitator.
The facilitators, yes. Yeah. If you're looking at yourself as a facilitator, you will make some great success in this industry, because there will always be jobs for people like that. Always. We're always looking for these type of people who wants to raise the standard of other people. These are very, very few and far in between. So these people will always be highly requested. I just think sometimes people are so afraid of sharing the knowledge that they're having themselves, that they're thinking, oh, then I'm not so valuable anymore. That is not true, because as I said, the business will always go on without you or with you. What I judge people on is like, can you make other people better? Will people want to work with you? Can you make people improve under you? And that's what I'm looking for when I look for leaders within the group.
That's amazing. And you just said earlier something that intrigued me, and I want to ask you about it. You spoke about tough decisions. Yes. What was the toughest decision that you had to go through in the company that you can share with us?
Yes. The toughest decision was probably during COVID. We had some decisions to make. How we were going to deal with some internal staffing. We decided to actually let we had an in-house dev team, as an example, that we decided, like, okay, we're going to outsource it right now because we weren't sure if our business would survive. So we had to let several developers go at one time. We were cutting down. We had built a customer support team and here in Malta at the time, and we decided to start moving that to Latin America at the time to save all the costs. So, because I know that some people, I know they all have a good career now and have a job, but at the time, you're always feeling a bit guilty when you have to let people make them redundant. That's never as. To this day, it's always the hardest when you have to make a person redundant that doesn't deserve to be made redundant. But that was for business survival, in trying to, because we had no idea at the time how long COVID would happen. We had no idea if the business, how long the business would survive at that point, because it was early in our career, of our business, and it was a very uncertain time. So that was very, very tough.
And how did you coach yourself in this situation? What was the approach?
No, the only thing, as I said, the one thing I always believe in, I don't leave the tough decisions to other people to take or trying to make. I always spoke to people and I look at them in the eye and I tell them, this is situation, this is what we are in. And then...
No sugarcoating.
Because there is nothing you can say in these times that can make it easier for someone. And you don't want to put that responsibility on someone else. If that's a company decision taking, I'd rather go and inform people myself about what is happening and how it's happening than letting someone else deal with it, in a sense. I'm not pushing the responsibility to HR or to someone else. No, I'll go and speak to the people myself that I have to do it. And it's done like this, face-to-face. Not, you know, some email or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only way to deal with it, because people deserve respect. And I have seen, I think it's been very kind over the last couple of years, we have seen some examples that's gone viral in social media where people are just mass firing people over Zoom or things like this.
Yeah. I've heard so many stories about, it's freaking crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It's so not personal to the highest degree. It's crazy that it's even, you know, a thing, that it's normal, that people just do it just like this.
And I think it's really tough to do, though. That's why many people maybe are fleeing the responsibility. That's very tough to do. I hate it, but I also know I have to do it. There's no other way around it.
We spoke earlier about the lessons that you've learned. Now I'm curious to ask you, what are the lessons that you're trying to teach your employees, the most important ones, that you want people to take away from working with you or for you?
I think what I mentioned before, we have five core values in the company, and we're trying to do it. One of them is to walk in other people's shoes, as I mentioned before.
Yeah.
I think the other one is to have passion for what you're doing. I'm always saying people, if you're not having passionate when you're in the office, if you don't like what you're doing, please try either find something you like to do, either here or somewhere else, because yeah. I don't believe that you shouldn't be passionate in what you're doing. I understand some jobs is harder to be passionate about than others, but please try to be passionate about what you're doing. But the one thing I think as well is that is to find another way. That's another thing. That the one thing I really hate is when people are telling me, this is the way it's been done forever, and this is the way it's going to be done forever. It's yeah. like, no. We always try to find new ways of doing things that are either more efficient or are better, smarter, more clever. We're never stuck in this is the way we did it in the past or something, because the world is changing so quickly. Technology is changing so quickly, and we need to be adaptable and we need to be open for change all the time. And that is what I'm really trying to teach people, is that we cannot be stuck in the past. That is very dangerous, to be stuck in the past, because the world is moving too fast at the moment.
Too fast.
Yeah, it's too fast. And we need to be updated what's new fast, and we need to find new ways of doing things. So I think that's one, because I think it's very easy for people to fall into some kind of safety blanket. Just, this is the way I know how to do things. This is the way I have done it the last 10 years, as an example. It's very easy to fall back on that, because life is easy, work is easy that way, right? But I'm trying to say, no, let's go where it's uncomfortable. Let's go out on areas we never tried before. And I always say, try to fail and fail fast. Well, not try to fail, but try new stuff. And then if you fail, learn to fail fast and adapt and then move forward. I never judge people on their failures. It's just, I always say that I'd rather you try something and fail and learn from it than not trying at all. That's the one thing I don't like, when people don't try. Try, and then learn. That's the key for me.
What is your vision for yourself for the future?
My vision for myself is that, it's not a vision for myself. It's actually the one thing I'm battling with is myself, is that I'm not a traditional CEO of a company. I just founded a company which was three people, and now we're getting up to 100 people. So for me, it's like, I'm trying to figure out
in
what
2 years, people, 2 years, just to make it clear.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what is my next step, because I also know at some point I'm not the right leader for this company anymore, because I don't have probably the experience to run a company that's growing so fast that when we get up to 200, 250 people, I don't think I'm the right leader for this, because you need other skill sets as a CEO at the time. So I'm trying to figure out what is the right time for me to, because I think there is different type of CEOs, right? Like, when you're founding a company, you need a different skill set from when you're actually trying to maintain a company. As an example. And I try to figure out when is that exact point for me, because I don't want to be that person that sticks around for too long and actually creating, not optimizing the company in a sense. And I think that's the one that I'm figuring out right now. And I'm trying to figure out how will I fit the puzzle moving forward, you know? So that is something that it's not a vision. It's more like how I'm thinking about stuff right now. So I'm not really having a clear vision on what, that's probably a very uninspiring CEO talk. I should be telling you all this stuff, but I'm trying to be honest instead and say, that's the struggles I'm facing right now. It's like, when is the right time for me to step down? What should I be doing with this company in the future? So
I have to say that it is very inspiring, first of all, because, you know, Oprah said this sentence that I really live by, that she says, everything serves its purpose in its time. And I think it's super important to really internalize this sentence, to understand that me, myself, I have like a specific time when I'm the most valuable to a situation. And I need to know when to step off and allow the people and allow the business, allow the situation to, you know, grow its own wings. And I think that many business leaders, and not even just business leaders, like I think many people in general, they act from a very egoistic place of me, showing my face, being on top, blah, 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 without even having the right skill set or the right mindset or whatever for the optimal outcome of the situation. So I think what you just said was super impactful. I think many people should listen to it and really look inside of themselves and ask themselves, am I the right person for the right situation?
Yeah, I mean, that's what a little bit what I talked about before is like, even like me as a founder of the company, I'm not bigger than the company now. The company's grown to a piece where it has its own legs, and it, even if I'm there, not there, the company will move. That's, I think, a company that's healthy has that, meaning that you can't remove a person. You should never build a business which is reliant on one specific person. You need to build a business that can live without anyone. And I think it's just about which piece can optimize the company. And that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. When is the time for me to step off and let someone who's more suited to take the business to the next level step in, etc.
That's really powerful. And just for the end, I want to ask you, first of all, I want to thank you, first of all, for your time and for being so genuine and honest. I think it's very rare in general, not only in this field, but just being able to tell your story in such a genuine way. I highly appreciate it. And for people who want to get in touch with you, to talk to you, to learn more about you, how can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest would be just andreas@kto.com, which is my business email. Otherwise, on LinkedIn. So my name, Andreas Bardon, on LinkedIn will be the two social medias or emails that you can contact me easiest on.
Thank you so, so much for your time. It was a super insightful conversation, I have to say. And I really hope that our listeners, I'm pretty sure that they're going to like it a lot. If there is anything you want to add?
No, I just thank you for having me. It was a nice discussion to have. And I think it's a very interesting product that you're getting into. And I hope this can help getting a face of iGaming people that we are not so, that we are persons as well. I think so. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.